Hi, friend. You're listening to a London Lyceum exclusive episode that is typically only available to subscribers. If you want to have access to all of our exclusive content, including Kiffin's Keep, Generally Particular, Typology by Immersion, The Hanover House, and all of our live stream content, consider joining for just $5 a month. Not only will you be getting access to all of this content and more, but you'll also be supporting and investing in an institution serious about thinking. So why not go ahead and click the link in the description now and enjoy all of the exclusive content directly to your mobile device or wherever you listen. As always, we're thinking about new ways to get you thinking, and we appreciate your support. Thanks for listening.
Hello, I'm Jake Stone.
I'm Jesse Owens.
And we welcome you to another episode of Generally Particular, a production of the London Lyceum. Generally Particular is a show dedicated to discussing and reflecting on the whole Baptist story. We are a show by Baptists, about Baptists, and for Baptists, as well as Anglicans, Methodists, Presbyterians, and Lutherans. I'm a Calvinist Baptist, and Jesse is an Arminian Baptist. In the 17th and 18th centuries, we would have been known as a General Baptist and a Particular Baptist, so we brought those together in what we think is a fun way to form Generally Particular. Well, we are here in May. We've made it to the end of the semester. I wish everybody could have heard the recording earlier as Jesse bore his soul to me as he comes to the end of, he's feeling it, folks. He really is. Here I am, though. I mean, I'm doing multiple degrees, full-time job, and I've got to be the Baptist voice of reason.
Yeah, but you have it pretty hard.
I do.
You have it pretty hard.
I've got it hard.
Not everyone is, maybe some people listen to this if Jordan posts the audio, but I'd like everyone to take note of Jake's new office he's got going on here. He's got a nice chair. Look, he's got some nice bookshelves in the back, I see. He's got some books he's borrowed from the library on his shelf there. So this is much different than your normal basement situation. You really moved up in the world is what I'm trying to say.
Well, it's nice. I actually finally have a permanent office at the library. So I've got to actually, hopefully by the next time we record that I'll have the shelves actually full. But let me go ahead and say that I have inherited these bookcases and bookshelves. They are not new. They are up from our third floor. So if they could talk, what stories they could share. But it is fun. Yes, those, I like to tell people, these are the books behind me here that have the blue labels are our library books. And these are the ones that I want to make sure that I keep and nobody else checks out for different project purposes. And so up above here is actually really cool. That is the original American Commentary set. A lot of our listeners are probably familiar with the New American Commentary, the NAC. But the original, which was just on the New Testament originally, if I remember correctly, of course, John Broadus did Matthew in that set, which is probably the most famous volume from that set. Like, I don't know if anybody, I mean, I don't really recognize any of the other names. I think maybe Alva Hovey wrote one of the volumes. I think he was the editor for the whole set. He may have wrote one of those. I can't remember, but yeah. So
people still reference that Matthew commentary. I still see that when I'm reading commentaries today.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, a kind of an idea that I've got that I want to, maybe an article that I work on this summer is on Southern Baptist and the Decalogue. Really, how did early Southern Baptists talk about the Ten Commandments, particularly looking at how did they frame about the Sabbath? And Broadus has some excellent comments in the chapters where Jesus is dealing with the Sabbath. And it's pretty interesting. He, you know, for example, he roots the Sabbath command being perpetual because it's a creation ordinance. He said the Sabbath and marriage are the two things that are still with us from the pre-fall state of humanity.
Very good. Look forward to that. You've been writing some stuff recently.
Well, I'm a part of a Substack.
Okay.
That I write with Casey McCall, who's been on.
Yeah, we've had him on the show.
Yeah, he usually writes the more spicy.
Yeah. We really like Casey. You know, the Auburn stuff. We're trying to get past that. But otherwise, great guy. Great historian, yeah. Too.
Yeah, really good. Really good. And I'm excited about kind of just a few projects, even with him going forward. And I'm still waiting on him to finish a book so that all three of us can discuss the book on the podcast.
Yeah. You know, Casey really wants to discuss is Miles Smith's book.
Yes, that's the book.
From Davenant. So at some point we're going to discuss that with Casey, maybe specifically his views on John Leland and Jeffersonian Baptists and those sorts of things, which we talked about a little bit with him, but maybe we'll get into a little bit more detail. So
I think it's probably what Miles says about Baptists in general. I don't know if it's just one person or one segment. I think it encompasses the entire tradition.
Yeah, I don't get the sense Miles is very fond of Baptists. So
we're not in the top five, we'll put it that way, I don't think.
Which I just want to remind folks, Miles teaches at an institution that was founded by Free Will Baptists in the North, at Hillsdale. And so there's a lot of irony going on there. But if Miles ever hears this, Miles, we're sad that you don't like us very much.
Yeah, but those were the very liberal Free Will Baptists, weren't they?
Some of them at Bates College and Cobb Divinity School, in the late 1800s, early 1900s, Shirley Jackson Case might be a name people are familiar with, certainly went far afield and ended up joining the Northern Baptist Convention, I believe in 1911, 13, something like that.
Yeah, earlier today, I had somebody that sent me an article that someone had written and was asking me about some of the claims that were made in this article, including that all the General Baptists went anti-Trinitarian.
All of them. Every single one of them.
I defended Jesse's people.
Thank you, sir.
Tried to say, no, it's a little simplistic to put it that way. So
I appreciate that. That took real courage. You really could have just let that bus roll right over us. So thank you.
I probably should have, since you said you didn't make any preparation for this episode.
What? That is not true. I am so prepared to talk about Leroy Forlan's Quest for Truth and Thomas Grantham's Christianismus Primitivus, which leads into what we're discussing today, which is Surveying Baptist Systematic Theologies, which is going to be primarily Jake telling us what his favorite Baptist systematic theologies are.
Well, first of all, I need to get a little credit. Surveying Systematic. See, nice little alliteration.
That's good.
I had an article idea that I sent Jesse over the weekend that had some rhyme, and he basically, in so many words, as a friend said, it was garbage. And so
That's not true. I said what you're trying to do is pretty complex, and I think you should take a little bit more time to think about it. But what's related to what you were just saying a moment ago is it was alliterated. What Jake had put together was alliterated.
I sent it to Casey too, and he said the same thing. He said, your alliteration is getting in the way of making this better. So both Jesse and Casey hated on my creativity.
No. We lovingly said as good friends, hey, this is a good idea. Maybe let it simmer a little longer.
Because right now it's kind of crappy. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, so we are surveying Baptist systematics because, frankly, I think a lot of people don't think Baptists do systematic theology. Now, part of that is on us that we've invited that critique in more recent, I would say more recent times. Although, you know, there is a tradition that does exist very much of Baptist penning systematics. And so we're going to start in the 17th century. Now, Jesse has been critiqued on this point he's about to make, but Jesse gets to talk about what he calls, I'll let the audience judge, the first systematic written by a Baptist.
Yeah, the first Baptist systematic theology. Sorry, John Gill, that title does not go to you. It goes to the English General Baptist Thomas Grantham and his work, Christianismus Primitivus, from 1678, which we've talked about on the show before. And there's a sense in which it is a collection of Grantham's writings on a variety of topics, but I think it's organized in a systematic sort of way, not in the way maybe we would think of systematic theology texts, especially as you get into the 19th and 20th centuries. But it is systematic in the sense of dealing with the authority of Scripture, ecclesiology, soteriology, all of those sorts of things. So there are some works in here that Grantham had written prior to this, and then basically they're included in the work. But the work is very long. It's a very long work. What Grantham is trying to do is what he get at what he sees as primitive Christian religion. So he's looking at the Bible, but he's also looking a great deal at the history of the church and theologians in the early church, which he draws on a lot. He also includes, we've talked about this before, he includes the Nicene Creed in here, as well as, I think, the Apostles' Creed. So this is the first Baptist systematic theology. I love Garrett Walden. I think he wants John Gill to have that title. And I told him, I said, Garrett, you know, you can have a lot of things, but can you not just let my people have something? And that being that Thomas Grantham wrote the first Baptist systematic theology in 1678. So, yeah, that's the first one.
How many pages is it?
Well, it's kind of hard to tell because the numbering is very odd. So it actually starts over. The page number starts over with each major section. So let me see if I have a separate document that shows that. You can fill the airwaves for us for a moment while I look that up.
What do you think is the strength of Grantham's work?
It's 620 something pages.
It would have been funny if it was 666.
Wow.
I could have had a lot of fun with that.
So much hate. What do I think the strength is? Well, again, I think what he's trying to do, I don't want us to talk about this too much, or I don't want people to get tired of this from hearing it from us or hearing it from, you know, the guys at Center for Baptist Renewal have been talking about it for a long time. But I do think it's very important to say these Baptists in the 17th century, including Thomas Grantham here, they're wanting to say two things. One, that their theology is biblical, but two, that it's consistent with broad swaths of the Christian tradition. I think that it matters first and foremost to them that what they're saying is rooted in the teachings of Scripture. So they want to show, where is this taught in the Bible? But at the same time, they are trying to say, but look, you can find these things, we're not just going to the text for the first time by ourselves, you know, or without the aid of the tradition. Look, you can see these things in the early church. You can find some of these things in the medieval period, and then even in the Protestant and Reformed tradition. So I think both of those things are strong suits for what Grantham does. There's also a great deal of argument that he makes for just Baptist understanding of believers' baptism, of ecclesiology. So I would say some of the ecclesiological material is very important. And that's something that you don't always find in systematic theologies, even from Baptists. You don't always get a whole lot of material on the church. And Grantham has a great deal of that. And part of that's because of the situatedness, the period in which he's writing. But sometimes when you get into Baptist systematic theologies in the 20th century and the 21st century, ecclesiology might be there, but not really. There's not a whole lot. It's kind of just another chapter. It takes up a far larger space, much more space in Christianismus Primitivus maybe than you find in later Baptist systematic theologies.
Well, really moving from the 17th century to the 18th century, we come to the real first systematic theology.
Yeah.
That would be, here it is, folks, in one volume, the body of doctrinal divinity and a body of practical divinity by John Gill. How many pages did you say? 600 and something? Yeah, I thought so. John Gill's is over 1,000.
Well, you got to realize the size of paper that Granthams is on too. If you had a copy of Christianissimus Primitivus, it's probably like, you know, a foot tall. If you see an original copy, which actually I think Southern has, I think they have a copy. So you need to pull that out sometime and look at it. So I don't know if we want to get into word count and things like that. You know, we could compare who has the longest systematic theology.
It's probably in restricted for a variety of reasons. All right. So I think that in describing Gill's work here, this sentence needs to be read. This is from the little biography of Gill here in the front. There's nobody here. It doesn't say who wrote it. It's got to be John Rippon, I'm assuming, is who because Rippon did write a biography of Gill. Are you ready, Jesse?
I'm so ready. Am I going to make a frowny face like Gill?
No. Here, however, we feel pleasure in saying, we cannot contemplate the life and character of John Gill without pronouncing him one of the greatest and best of men. So, I would argue that this is probably the best systematic theology a Baptist has ever penned because of the scope of the work. It does deal with what we would call, you know, the doctrinal divinity, but then it does consider much on the church as well, the practical side. And I think now I have disagreements with Gill. I don't agree with him on everything. There would be some things I disagree with him on soteriology. There are some things on ecclesiology too. I mean, Gill could be a little authoritarian in some of his applications.
He's a bit of a Baptist bishop kind of.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in life, he was. I mean, it said that no preacher was married, buried, or ordained apart from Dr. Gill in London. So I think there's some truth to that.
Yeah.
But I think that this is an excellent work. And I think that many Baptists would do well. If you're going to claim that Baptists don't do systematic theology, then you're showing that you've not read and looked at Gill here. And in fact, I mean, I would argue that in many Baptist ministers' libraries in this time period, when they had, especially in America, as we get into the 19th century, late 18th, early 19th century, their resources could be limited, but they always had Gill, whether that be his theology or his commentaries as well. And so I think Gill represents the best of a Baptist doing scholastic theology would be in this work. And in fact, if you can find it with both works in one, that's really helpful.
Well, I thought we were down on the scholastics. So this is really throwing me for a loop here.
No, I think, you know, then that kind of moves us to the 19th century, and you really can see the difference in methodology in the systematic theologies that are published. Let me go ahead and say something too. There are different Baptist individuals who publish like compendiums of doctrine, like, you know, James Madison Pendleton does one, for example, but we don't necessarily classify it as a systematic. It's not as in depth as what we would consider a normal systematic. So really in Southern Baptist life, the two kind of gigantic systematics that get published are first John Daggs in the 1850s, and then James Pettigrew Boyce, which is the 1880s. And I've got this lovely new edition. I love when we do this stuff. It's like show and tell.
That is nice. Look at that.
This new edition of An Abstract of Systematic Theology by Boyce. And I'll come back and talk about this in a moment. But Daggs and Boyce are both Southern Baptist writing as historic Baptist, Calvinistic in their soteriology, covenantal in their hermeneutic, but they are doing it very differently. Dagg never quotes anyone in his manual of theology that I'm aware of. It is strictly him taking the Bible and expounding and systematizing it. Now, he does that deliberately. It's not that Dagg was opposed to sources. I mean, he was a longtime pastor. He was a president of educational institutions. So the man was very learned. But his systematic was geared to be this work that I would say is more kind of in the fuller stream of Baptist life. It is very much a, this is what the Bible teaches. This is the biblical exposition systematized in categories. Boyce is following, in a sense, more of this Gill tradition of this being more done in a scholastic fashion. Now, what I will tell people, though, and we discussed this when the London, I keep forgetting that the camera doesn't see everything on the thing. When we read through Boyce in a London Lyceum reading group a few years ago, when you read Boyce's systematic, he's not consistent in his methodology. Now, I think there's one reason for that. He didn't sit down and write this. Like, it wasn't page one and he just was writing in this. This was his lectures that he delivered in class that were taken together. He did edit it some, and it was originally published just for his students. It's not until right before he dies that it's published, like, in the public can buy it and read it. So that's why there's times at the beginning he's laying out very clearly the Princetonian tradition that he inherited from his studies there. It's scholastic, it's confessional. It's really using these categories. I mean, Boyce had a Latin class where he used Turretin, but because he's shaped by Charles Hodge and there is some deviations in Hodge, you can also read Boyce at times that is very biblicist. His section on the Trinity, for example, I would argue he's departing at times away from a more confessional scholasticism towards a more biblicistic definition. And that's where he gets in some kind of, I would say, muddy waters and how he talks about the subordination of the Son, for example. It's very odd. You can read him early and he says, go read Gill on eternal generation, which is very scholastic. And then he gets into the Trinity stuff about the Son, and it's, you know, I'd say he should have followed Turretin more instead of Hodge.
But they both
represent these streams in Baptist life that I the longer I look at things, the more I despise how Gill versus Fuller was so long sewn in the Baptist story as if you've got to be one or the other. Whereas I think we need both of those streams. And I think the way Dagg does systematics and the way Boyce does systematics, we need both of those things.
Yeah. There certainly is that impulse. And again, I think you see this in Grantham, this kind of primitivist impulse that they have to want to say what the biblical text says. And sometimes, and hopefully listeners will understand, sometimes to a fault. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is not always harmonizing what you find in the witness throughout all of Scripture, but maybe emphasizing a peculiarity of a specific passage, or also not taking into account what the tradition has said or the way that it has harmonized those passages. And so that primitivist impulse of wanting to say what the text says, sometimes that's really good. And I would say that's kind of what gave us Baptist theology and ecclesiology, is a willingness to deviate in some ways, to stick with what the text said. But then also that can be problematic if it's not governed in a sense with the kind of rule of faith, and you don't always get that.
You know, it's interesting. I want to circle back to something you said earlier about Baptist systematics, strangely speaking, not talking about the church. So Dagg publishes a manual of theology, and then he has a separate volume, a treatise on church order. And the treatise on church order is almost as long as his systematic. So he dives very deep into ecclesiology, but it's a separate volume.
Yeah.
Boyce has no chapters at all in ecclesiology in his volume. Now the reason is because he used DAGs work. And so one would kind of put, you know, connections there that basically he would have endorsed everything that DAG wrote. But it is very, I mean, I would say that's a weakness of Boyce is systematic, is that he doesn't have any chapters. And also it's because he didn't teach, you know, church government was a separate class at Southern in those days. So that was a totally different course that he wasn't necessarily teaching.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's that again, that's not uncommon in later Baptist systematic theologies, is to think of dealing with ecclesiology separately, or dealing with it maybe as a small portion of the broader work. But I think in some of these earlier works, you might see it play a more prominent role. The idea that he's going to say, hey, what can I add to DAG? You know, look at DAG. Maybe he should have just had a chapter that said, just reference, you know, John DAG or something like that.
Yeah, I agree. I wish that we would have had, I wish he would have written a chapter. I do. But I also understand the structure of the school and how things work. Yeah. But kind of interesting, corresponding with these two men are two Northern Baptist theologians who write systematics, A Manual of Systematic Theology and Christian Ethics by Alva Hovey. And his work on ethics was, that volume was used by Boyce here. And then Systematic Theology in Three Volumes by H. Strong. Jesse, do you know anything about Alva Hovey or H. Strong's Systematic Theology? We really need Matt Schrader on here, who's done all
this. I was going to say, once you said Hovey, I was like, why don't we have Matt Schrader on here to tell us all about Alva Hovey?
So. But I would say both Hovey and Strong are while they're doing systematic theology, obviously, since they published, they do follow more of that biblicist bent. Like there is a book that was done in the 1880s on Baptist and doctrine, and there's different chapters from different Baptist figures. There is a chapter from Boyce in this. I think it's just taking it from different works of theirs. And it's Hovey who does the one for the Trinity, and it's no bueno. I mean, it's not. He tries to use an illustration. I don't think it may have been water. I can't remember, something kind of like that. And it's like, you know, all I can hear is, you know, the cartoon saying that's heresy, Patrick. you know. So, but it represents, though, it's that impulse, both with Hovey and Strong. They're you know, they're Calvinistic in their soteriology, but a lot of this, like how they're framing things, it's not Gill, we'll put it that way. It's far removed from Gill's tradition.
So Jake, you see, since you're more familiar with Boyce and even Strong and Hovey, let me ask about Boyce in particular, but then, you know, you can give me whatever you have on the others as well. So in Gill, I'm sure there's a lot on the tradition, right? Do you find that there's less engagement with historical figures in Boyce than what you find? Well, how much does Boyce engage the tradition? Maybe that's a better way of asking it.
I said, first of all, I'll tell anybody, His opening chapter one on the science of theology is very well done, and he provides for the reader what his philosophy is on how he's doing this. He begins, first of all, in saying, and when I do systematic theology, I'm first of all doing biblical theology. And he makes the clear distinction, because by this point, and especially this had found its way in Northern Baptist schools, you know, the subject of biblical theology, the way that we would think of it in our circles, is not it's more biblical theology in that time period is almost synonymous with historic criticism. Mm-hmm. You know, Boyce is saying there are people who do biblical theology and say you can do biblical theology without affirming biblical inspiration. And he said, that's not what I'm doing. He said, true biblical theology should recognize the inspired source whence comes its teachings. So he said, I'm doing that. But then, you know, he uses the term Christian dogmatics, which is systematics is what it is. He's saying we use categories in putting together words that maybe aren't used in scripture, but they are describing that which is found in scripture. And then he has a third category, which is ecclesiastical dogmatics, consists of authoritative statements of doctrine put forth by somebody of Christians claiming to be a church of Christ. These would be found in creeds, symbols, decrees, apologies, and resolutions. They may also appear in the form of authoritative discussions of the creed or system of doctrine of any church. And he said, it thus appears that a perfect system of theology will combine all of these classes. Now, he didn't always consistently follow his own method, I would argue. But I do think it's interesting. He definitely has a respect for the tradition, but most of the people that he cites through this are more contemporaries, like Charles Hodge or A.A. Hodge. You know, there's a couple of times he quotes Andrew Fuller. There's a few times he quotes John Gill. There's a couple of times Jonathan Edwards. I don't think he ever mentions Calvin, apart from talking about, you know, Calvinism, like, you know, just the connection there. But he's obviously aware of it. Turretin, I mean, that's, you know, somebody that's very important to him as well. Strong and Hovey, I would suspect there's less of that.
Yeah. I was just kind of looking through the notes, the footnotes here in Hovey's work, and very similar figures, by the way. Hodge, Edwards, a little bit of Augustine here and there, but much more modern figures and fewer, you know, historical early church medieval sources. We'll have to get Matt Schrader to come on and give us the details.
Boyce is not citing Aquinas.
I didn't expect that he was.
I don't think Ovi is either.
No.
And I certainly know Aquinas is not in John Dagg's systematic. So.
Mm. Yeah. And I mean, you know, so in these guys' defense, I mean, there's much more of a proliferation and publication than of these, this type of material in the time period that they're writing, that guys in the 17th and 18th century weren't having to deal with, you know. So there's just much more contemporary publication that they're having to engage, or that they feel the need to engage than Gill or, you know, Grantham would have felt like they needed to.
Well, that then brings us to the 20th century. And what should we say? Maybe it was the best of times. Not really. The worst of times. Yeah.
I feel like when you were going through Boyce, you were really setting us up for the 20th century. You were setting us for that deviation, that departing from the Boyce model.
Yeah. I mean, I would argue Boyce is the last of his class for a long time.
The last of his kind.
Yeah, I mean, really. I mean, so let's talk. I mean, the first, I would argue, really major systematic theology penned by a Baptist in the 20th century is by one of Boyce's successors, E.Y. Mullins, who writes The Christian Religion and Its Doctrinal Expression. And it is a book dedicated to Boyce. And the first two pages, when Mullins lays out his theological method, it is Mullins basically denouncing Boyce's whole methodology.
Yeah.
And Mullins is like, we're just wanting to see what the Bible says. You know, we're not interested in systems. We're not interested in any of that kind of stuff. And I often say, if you really want to capture the difference between the two men and how they did theology, it's when you read them on Adam and Adam's headship and sin and inability. Boyce expounds Romans 5 on these things. Mullins says it's speculative. The Bible doesn't tell us the answers.
Yeah.
I mean, very, very different, because Mullins's goal in his theology was to synthesize Calvin and Schleiermacher. And I don't think you can do that. And that's why I would argue the attempt of trying to do it is why Mullins is muddied in many areas. But Mullins is introducing, is writing a systematic, and he's bringing in this whole notion of Christian experience being at the core of systematic theology.
Yeah. And we talked about that in pretty full detail in a previous episode. Yeah. So if anybody wants to go back and look at the Mullins episode, we had one on Mullins and Machen. We talk about the difference in methodology between the two a bit more. And I think as we pointed out in that episode, Jake, something you said quite plainly is Machen seems to follow the methodology of Boyce more than Mullins, who's actually the disciple or the student of Boyce. So it was a bit of
you know, I thought Jesse was going to say that I said something eloquently, and then he goes with plainly.
Oh, sorry.
That was a letdown. I was getting kind of excited over about, you know, something.
I think you're misunderstanding brilliant. Plainly. I meant clearly. How about that? Is that better?
Bluntly is what he means. So, yeah, you got Mullins. Then you have a little bit later, W.T. Connor, who taught systematic theology for a long time at Southwestern, did a volume called Christian Doctrine. It's an interesting piece because he dedicates it to his three teachers. Hmm. Calvin Goodspeed, who was the first theology professor at Southwestern, so very close to B.H. Carroll. Then A.H. Strong and E.Y. Mullins. So Connor studied under all three of those men. And I think when you read Connor, you get a taste of all three of them. It really, he's trying to pull the best of those three, but it is a departure from the Boyce model. And then to kind of bring it on into back to Southern Seminary, Dale Moody, who taught here a long time in the second half of the 20th century, you and I got to hear some stories about Dale Moody when we visited Timothy George. He wrote The Word of Truth. And it was, if we're thinking about progression, systematic theology teachers at Southern, Boyce, Mullins publish, Moody publishes. Dale Moody had the three isms that he despised: Calvinism, landmarkism, and dispensationalism, and that fueled his systematic in many ways. Especially, it is very noteworthy of being a Southern Baptist systematic that affirmed apostasy in the sense that a true believer could apostatize, could lose their salvation, which caused much controversy.
And some things could be tolerated at Southern Seminary during that time, but not that. That's for sure.
No, because even if you take the abstract, as they did with a lot of the faculty, and kind of, weasel around and say, I'm affirming it. If you teach apostasy and you've got the article on perseverance, there's no way to square that round peg. Yeah. You can't. So they couldn't. So that he could not get away with that one. So, but that's really that's where Southern Baptist systematics were going. But then you have also in the 20th century, and I know that Jesse has read all of this, the six volumes of Carl F. H. Henry, God, Revelation, and Authority, which is being done by a man that was trained in Northern Baptist circles, but was conservative, but also had a lot of ties to the SBC as well. Jesse, have you used that set very much? I own it, but I've never really used it very much.
They used to sell it at the bookstore at Southern, and I considered buying it when I was a student there, but I never did. I've used some of Carl Henry's other work, but I have not used God, Revelation, and Authority a lot. So,
and then it kind of rounded out the end of the 20th century. You have Christian Theology by Millard Erickson, and then, probably, if we were just talking about volumes that have been bought, the volume that has been penned by a Baptist in systematics that's been purchased by more people is Wayne Grudem. And so that rounds out the 20th century from the Southern Baptist side.
Which, and by the way, we could talk about methodology on some of those as well. I mean, just maybe in passing, I think there's a pretty broad consensus that Grudem doesn't engage the tradition very much either. That he's not that he's just cherry picking text or proof texting the whole way through, but that it isn't an engagement with the tradition in a in any sort of robust way. And I think that they kind of added. Did Allison write a volume? Or,
yeah, you have Greg Allison's Historical Theology, which is kind of like that's the
kind of a companion volume.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, so that there are some others. Some Northern Free Will Baptists at the end of the 19th century. There's a guy, John Butler, who has a systematic theology. But anyways, yeah, the Grudem, I mean, it's hard to I don't think we'd come up with anything that had sold more copies than that. I think that has sold the most copies.
Well, what about you just mentioned, you know, Northern Baptists. What about, you know, in your tradition, Jesse, what in the 20th century, what would you offer up as kind of the best in the systematics that have been done in the Free Will Baptist
Association? Yeah, I would say for Free Will Baptist, Leroy Fourlines wrote a systematic theology called The Quest for Truth. And it's a true systematic theology. Interestingly enough, I would say he very much was influenced by, I think, reading Francis Schaeffer. So there's quite a mixture of engaging figures from the 18th and 19th century. He deals with some early church stuff, but mostly figures from the 18th and 19th and 20th centuries, and a lot of Calvinists as well. But there's a lot of kind of cultural worldview type stuff that's mixed in. So the type of stuff that you would expect from Francis Schaeffer in the way of worldview analysis finds its way into Fourlines of Systematic Theology. And I think it's because he intends for it to be very geared towards human experience. So he doesn't want it to be, you know, just too dry or heady. So he's always trying to connect doctrine to the life and experience of individuals. And it's a pretty substantial systematic theology. It's probably close to 500 pages. There is a version of it that Matt Pinson edited that looks just at the soteriology of his systematic theology. And it was republished under the title Classical Arminianism. But the full systematic theology is The Quest for Truth. And I would say that is by far the most substantial Free Will Baptist systematic theology of the 20th century. There are some other shorter kind of doctrines books, maybe that are similar to the shorter Millard Erickson volume, Introducing Christian Doctrine, but nothing as fully orbed as Fourlines' Quest for Truth.
Well, we all wait for the 21st century version of it to come from your pen. So.
Yeah, we'll see. I might stick to Baptist history and historical theology. So maybe I could write a companion historical theology for that. You know,
there you go. Yeah,
there we go.
Well, that brings to the 21st century, and who has written a systematic as a Baptist in the 21st century?
Well, I've got over here that giant Wellam volume,
right?
And it's like, what, the first of how many?
Now that I don't know. I don't know how many volumes.
This thing is, this is 1,000 pages by itself.
Man.
In 980 something. So I had Wellam for systematic theology at Southern in the MDiv, and then I had him for a course on Christology in the PhD program. Wellam is a fantastic teacher, great teacher. I haven't gone through this systematic theology very much. This very much, by the way, fits B&H's kind of newest model, where the font in here, it's almost double spaced. It's a very interesting approach that they have.
I was looking through that volume earlier today.
But Wellam, Wellam's an example. Did you have some other ones in mind?
There's one name. By the way, would you tell our audience what the name of that is? It's from
this first volume, Systematic Theology from Canon to Concept. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember. His last name is Culver, I think, that did a systematic theology. And I know Desiring God had an article on him. I think I own. Does that name sound familiar to you?
It does not.
Maybe I'm wrong. I'm trying to type on my main computer.
Yeah. I mean, I can think of like some edited volumes, like that Aiken volume, A Theology for the Church.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
So that's like a multi-author, and I think it's kind of intended to be a sort of systematic theology.
But actually just one man writing a systematic in the 21st century as a Baptist.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's something we're not thinking of. In fact, if you're listening to this and you're like, I can think of five, please put it in the comments.
Yeah, let us know. We don't know everything.
There's inevitably something we're not thinking of. I mean, there's no way in the last 25 years there haven't been more Baptists writing some sort of systematic theology.
Okay, Robert Culver is his name that I was referring to.
Okay. Now, I hear you talk about Culver some, but it's usually not in reference.
Yeah, it's usually into the food. For the restaurant, not that, yeah. So,
oh, man.
Well, this has been fun, and seriously, yeah. If our audience has some, you know, other examples, maybe that we've overlooked, as I've stated before, there are examples of Baptist individuals that put together volumes on doctrine, but yeah. Not in the what I would say was not as a rigorous presentation of systematic theology as the men that we have listed here today.
Yeah.
But we hope it does show that Baptists do theology.
That's
now, whether we do it well or not, you have to decide.
Oh, we do it well. We do it well.
We want to also remember the mantra of Fox News. We report, you decide.
Oh, those were different days.
Oh,
those were different days.
That's when high school Jake wanted to be a Fox News host or talk radio host.
Yeah. I started to say, give a specific person's name that you could be in the mold of, but I didn't want you to be offended. So
who are you going to say?
What do you think I was going to say?
I don't know. Who?
Tucker Carlson. Minus that maniacal laugh. How about that?
Word. Well, on that note, we'll close the show down.
You could have just had one of those bow ties, you know, like he had.
No, I don't do that. I've worn a bow tie years. Just once. Yeah. Well, on that note, now that I'm the Tucker Carlson of Generally Particular, we do want to remind our audience to always stay Baptist.
Stay Baptist.
Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.